sex and happiness.
Both enrich our lives, change our lives in ways that make life worth living. Yet it's surprising how few people can honestly say that they enjoy regular and fulfilling sex or describe themselves and their lives as happy. Want you to make me feel like I'm the only girl in the world. Like I'm the only one that you'll ever love. Host Lori Handlers helps you to explore, learn about, and most importantly, have great sex. And in the process, she helps you to experience real intimacy and happiness.
Sex and happiness.
You'll laugh a little, learn a little, and we hope put a smile on your face and a smile in your life. Now here's Lori.
Welcome to Sex and Happiness today. I'm back with another show, and I'm excited to have you all back. Thank you for listening. Today we're going to be dealing with a topic that nobody likes to deal with, but we all have to. We have to face this topic, especially if we're sexual beings, and hopefully we all are that. We're going to be talking today about STDs, sexually transmitted diseases. We're going to talk about what they are and how people could be affected by them and the kinds of things and precautions that we have to take. And there might even be some new things that I don't know about. I'm sure I am up on them, but you never know. I'd like to learn something about them too. However I can protect myself is how I'm always going to protect myself. I'm always going to move in that direction, and hopefully you will as well. My guest today is Dr. Justine Marie Shuey. She's also known as Juicy Justine, and she's a highly trained sexuality educator. She's an adjunct professor, board-certified sexologist, and gynecological teaching associate. Justine presents workshops on a variety of topics related to sex and sexuality in an entertaining and interactive format for individuals of all ages. Now, last time Justine was on the show, we talked about how she actually gives lessons and seminars to medical students, people in the medical world who need to learn more about sex. And today she's going to talk to us about this very, very important topic of sexually transmitted diseases. Justine, welcome to Sex and Happiness.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm so glad you could be on today. And today we're going to talk about this serious and somber topic, sexually transmitted diseases. And I know that you do things in a fun and informal way, and hopefully we can have a little fun while we're talking about this, but also get the message across to people that this is something that they really, really need to pay attention to. So let's just for a second cover some of the basics. What are sexually transmitted diseases? How could we define them?
Sexually transmitted infections are generally thought of as infections, diseases, things like that, that can be passed from one person to another through sexual contact. And so sexual contact can be a variety of different things. It doesn't just have to be penis and vagina intercourse. Some things can be transmitted through skin-to-skin contact, but the things we're calling sexually transmitted infections or sexually transmitted diseases are things that are passed from one person to another, most commonly through sexual contact.
Okay, so yeah, when you say skin to skin contact, all of a sudden that would make my skin crawl. Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. But since you did say it, what can you give an example of something that could be transmitted skin to skin? Are you talking about like pink eye or
herpes? Like herpes or the human papillomavirus, HPV, both are transmitted through skin to skin contact. So just touching, skin together can transmit that. You don't need any sort of fluids for that.
You're kidding.
No.
You don't need any fluids to transmit the herpes virus.
Nope. Skin to skin. That's it.
Hmm. Okay. I just, I noticed my stomach got really tight. I stopped breathing for a minute. I had no idea about that. I considered myself and most of my friends very lucky that we've never gotten anything like that. Wow. Mm-hmm. Skin to skin. Okay. And about what percent of the population would you say has the herpes HPV virus?
A lot of people. I don't know the exact percentages. I'm not a statistical person. I'm a practical person. There are two different strands of the herpes virus. Herpes simplex 1, HSV 1, is the herpes you get on your mouth. And most people have them, and most people don't think of them as herpes. They call them cold sores or fever blisters or things like that. When you're talking about HPV, the human papillomavirus, there's over 100 different strands, and not all the strands affect the genital area. So if someone has, like, a flat wart on, say, their finger or their, you know, toe or their elbow or something like that, that's technically the human papillomavirus. So not all of it affects the genital area.
So you're even talking about, like, plantar warts?
I don't know specifically if plantar warts are considered HPV, but most warts are, and it's caused by skin changes. So,
interesting. Very interesting. Well, so that's one that can be transmitted by what you said, skin to skin, just touching someone who has the virus. Now, I didn't know we were going to get into this one so quickly, but there are some myths about this one. For example, if people do have genital herpes breakouts, they feel that if they have a breakout and they stay away from sexual activity, they'll be safe from spreading it. They'll be safe from spreading it to a partner. But I guess from what you're saying now, if someone has the, and how do you say it again? Say it slowly. It's human papillomavirus?
Human papillomavirus, HPV, also known as genital warts.
So this can, I mean, this sounds like this can be transmitted whether somebody has a breakout or not.
Yes and no. I mean, it depends on what it is. I know herpes can be transmitted through asymptomatic viral shedding. So you don't need to have any current signs or symptoms to pass herpes from one person to another. As for HPV, there's skin changes there. So not all skin changes are visual things that you're going to notice. You might be able to feel a difference in texture, but some of the HPV that people get, or the human papillomavirus, doesn't necessarily cause warts. So it's hard to say that there's not something there.
Even if somebody feels they don't have a breakout, it's hard to say that they don't have a breakout. They might not notice it. I think that's,
yes.
Yeah, okay.
And the thing is, there's not really testing for it either on most people, so you wouldn't know. Like men, for example, there's no test for HPV for men unless there is a visual lesion. In women, women get pap smears, and that's checking for abnormal skin changes and cell changes on the cervix, but that's the only place it's checking for, and you can get HPV a lot of other places in a lot of other ways, other than just, you know, on the cervix, but that's the only place they're currently testing for.
And if somebody does have herpes, genital herpes, or HPV somewhere else on their body, what can they do?
I mean, it depends on what it is and how it's affecting your life. It's not something that can be cured. It's never going to go away. It's a virus, so it's in your system forever. I mean, most of the time, it's not affecting your life. Yeah, it may affect your sex life. You may not be able to have unprotected sex with everyone you'd want to, but why would you want to do that? You know, if you're thinking about it, there's so many other things you can get. But as far as, you know, HPV, like HPV and herpes are two very different things. They have, you know, different signs, different symptoms. But the human papillomavirus has both high-risk and low-risk strands. So some of the high-risk strands can ultimately lead to cancer, cervical cancer, or other forms of cancer. And then the low-risk strands usually just cause, like, you know, common warts and things like that. You can get them burnt off or, you know, frozen off and all the different ways they can do that now. So you can get them removed. It doesn't mean they're not going to come back. It doesn't mean that there's not going to be abnormal skin changes. It doesn't mean that you won't be able to pass it on.
Okay. It's a pretty sobering thing, mm-hmm. As you describe it. It's a pretty intense thing, I think, to face. And, of course, people can live through it and have wonderful lives. And it's not something to be ignored.
Yeah.
I think that's the gravity of what you're pointing out here about this. I never heard of HPV really until a year or so ago. I had only heard of herpes. Mm-hmm. And they're not exactly the same, but they're connected. They're viruses that get in the body and can be, what you said, passed from one person to the other. through skin to skin contact. Okay. Actually a good place to break. I didn't know we were going to just totally blow out that particular category in the very beginning of our talk. But when we come back from break, I'd like to talk about some of the other things, some of the other sexually transmitted diseases, what they are and how people get them, and, you know, what might be new things that we've never heard of, or, and of course, how people can protect themselves. So if you've just tuned in, I am speaking to Dr. Justine Marie Shuey. She is also known as Juicy Justine, and she is an expert on sexuality education. She's a professor and board-certified sexologist, and she's going to be telling us more about sexually transmitted diseases and how you can keep yourself from getting them. So please stay tuned.
Wondering what book you should read to jumpstart your sex life and increase your happiness? Try my book, Sex and Happiness, The Tantric Laws of Intimacy by me, Laurie Handlers. This short, easy-to-read book will make you laugh at yourself, and it may possibly make you cry as you discover my tantric secrets for happiness and how they apply to you. In the book, I begin with the 10th law, make love in the unknown. And then I work you all the way through laws 1 through 9 to teach you how to be in the unknown, fresh, every moment of every day of your life. Sex and Happiness puts the innocence and love back into sex and gives Tantra the respect it deserves. It's only $19.99 in paperback and $14.99 ebook. Go to sexandhappiness.com to order your copy of Sex and Happiness by me, Laurie Handlers.
Are you in pain or unable to sleep? Ever hear about how the body needs glutathione for natural cleansing? Could you use a boost of energy? Try Life Wave Patches. There are a variety of patches to choose from. Each one of them is designed like a small band-aid to help your body with the challenges of life when you're simply not getting what the body needs for support. And you can use these amazing patches on your pets. Go to Life Wave Patches for Pets and People on Facebook and see Suzanne Summers' interview with Dr. David Schmidt about patches that reduce stress and inflammation while increasing energy. You can also find out more at ValerieHandlers.com. That's ValerieHandlers.com. Or call Valerie at 714-928-6399 to order your patches, or consider becoming an independent Life Wave distributor. That's 714-928-6399.
Well, we're back with Sex and Happiness, and I'm Laurie Handlers, your host, and I'm speaking today with Justine Shuey. She is a highly, highly trained sexual educator, and she's telling us today about sexually transmitted diseases. Not the most fun topic, but certainly a topic that we need to look at, all of us, sexual beings, anybody who's having sex, anybody who's in the dating market, anybody who's lost a spouse and considering having sex again in their life. Everyone needs to consider this kind of thing when they're thinking about getting involved with another, thinking about getting physically involved with another. And these days people are doing all kinds of things. There's all kinds of questioning, monogamy. Lots of people are having polyamorous relatings, and in this kind of day and age where people might be swapping partners or seeing multiple partners, this is something that people really need to pay attention to. So Justine, you know, we really just pretty much covered the HPV virus and herpes in that last piece. What else are diseases that people need to be looking out for, or, you know, on the lookout for? When someone's interviewing a new possible sexual partner, what are some of the kinds of things they need to be asking about?
Oh, they need to ask about everything. So when you're meeting a new partner, I would definitely ask, do you have any sexually transmitted infections? And when our medical students, when we train medical students to ask, they'll say, oh, do you have any sexually transmitted infections? And then they'll list off a bunch that you might be concerned about. So, hey, do you or have you ever had a sexually transmitted infection like gonorrhea, chlamydia, herpes, HPV, HIV, syphilis, all of these different things? So asking your partner flat out, have you ever had it? Have you ever been tested? Because 90% of sexually transmitted infections are asymptomatic. So you don't know that you don't have it unless you get tested. When people go and get tested, it's important to ask your partner, hey, you know, when's the last time you were tested and what were you tested for? A lot of people will assume that when they go to get tested, they're tested for everything. So I've spoken to women and they say, oh yeah, I got tested for everything. I went and got a pap smear. Well, if you go and get a pap smear, the only thing you're checking for is HPV on the cervix and abnormal cell changes. They're not checking for any of the other sexually transmitted infections. And a lot of medical professionals, when they do test for sexually transmitted infections, they're not actually testing for HIV. They're doing that as part of another test. So there's different ways to get testing. So what were you tested for? When you say to a medical professional, hey, I want to get tested for everything, it's important to realize that everything at one doctor's office is not the same as everything at another doctor's office. Everything is everything in their list of tests that may not include tests for everything. They may only test for gonorrhea or chlamydia because they only have the capability to do a urine sample there. They may not take blood work. They may not do cell collections or collect samples. So what are they testing for? When's the last time you were tested? Hey, as a nice first date, let's go get tested together. And, you know,
that's a novel idea.
Yeah.
Date night. Let's go get tested together so that we can get to know each other. That's great.
Mm-hmm. Date night. Make it a date night. Go get some snacks because you're going to be hanging out for a little bit. And, you know, depending on where you go, if you're going to like a walk-in center, you're more likely to have a little bit longer of a wait versus if you have an appointment at a regular doctor. So,
okay, this is good. And it's very responsible what you're talking about. This is the most responsible way to handle things is to have a straight up talk with somebody who's a potential new partner, and then go get tested. And I love that you're emphasizing that not all tests in all doctors' offices or in all clinics are the same. So people have to say everything, meaning chlamydia, gonorrhea, syphilis, HIV, AIDS. All of these things are important to mention so that we know what we've actually been tested for.
Yeah, and ask your partner flat out, hey, have you ever had a cold sore? A lot of people don't link. You know, it's just people don't know that it's the same thing. Some people have gotten cold sores their whole life, and they're like, no, I don't have herpes. Well, actually, you probably do. So educating your partner, your new potential partner, is helpful as well.
How do people get these things? I mean, it's my understanding that if you have syphilis or gonorrhea, this comes directly from sexual intercourse. I've never heard of anybody getting syphilis or gonorrhea from kissing, but perhaps they do. I don't know. As much as I know about sex in this world, there's probably things that I haven't paid attention to lately. You know, there's all kinds of new developments. So why don't we take each one at a time? You know, we're not going to spend a whole segment on each disease, but how do you get syphilis?
Okay, so let's start with how you can't get syphilis. You can't get it through contact with a toilet seat or a doorknob or like a hot tub, a swimming pool, sharing clothing, sharing forks or anything like that. You can't get it that way. You can get it through person-to-person contact when you have direct contact with a syphilis sore. So there usually needs to be some sort of sore present. You can get sores in a lot of different places, including the genitals, vaginas, you know, penises, rectums, anus, wherever. You can also get it on the lips or on the mouth. So technically, you can get it from kissing if your partner has an active, like a syphilis sore on their lips or in their mouth. So
okay. And if you have it, this is something that can be treated with antibiotics?
Well, you need to go to the doctor and first confirm that that's definitely what it is. So it is curable in its early stages. The longer you have it and the more it progresses, the more difficult it is to treat. So what they'll tell you to do to treat syphilis is first abstain from sexual contact with all new partners until all sores are completely healed. They'll also give you antibiotics. It could be a single injection or a shot of penicillin, which is an antibiotic, but it may take more than that. You may need additional antibiotics. Another problem is that a lot of these infections are becoming antibiotic resistant. And so they're drug resistant strands. And they're like super strands of these things that used to be, hey, you take a shot of penicillin and you're done. Now you know, the infections are getting smarter and smarter, and so they are becoming more and more resistant to the medication and therefore harder to treat.
Okay, and the same thing, I don't know how prevalent it is now. I don't know how prevalent, I mean, it's the same thing for gonorrhea. Would we describe it the same way, except there wouldn't be sores?
Okay, so for syphilis, syphilis is getting more and more common, especially in populations of men who have sex with other men. Gonorrhea is commonly asymptomatic, so most people don't know they have it. If they do have it, there may be discharge from the penis or the vagina or the rectum. There could be burning. There could be itching. There could be a sore throat. You can get gonorrhea in your throat from unprotected oral sex. So you also, there doesn't need to be an ejaculation for gonorrhea to be transmitted from one partner to another. So that's another thing. Gonorrhea.
So that's dangerous because a person could not know they have it.
Exactly. And just because your partner had it and they didn't have any symptoms doesn't mean that you're going to get it and not necessarily have any symptoms.
So, again, protected sex. It just keeps coming back down to protected sex.
Protected sex for oral sex, anal sex, vaginal sex doesn't matter. When you're talking about, you know, protecting yourself and who you're sleeping with, it really doesn't matter who is having sexual contact with who. What matters is what is touching what. And if a something is touching a something else, you are at risk for a lot of different things.
It sounds so bleak.
Yeah.
It really does sound so bleak.
It does.
And yet, it's so important. Mm-hmm. So it matters what is touching what.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're gonna break here again for a moment. When we come back, there's a whole range of other things I want to ask you about, and then there are some trends that we need to touch base on also, because there are some surprises out there about these sexually transmitted diseases, things that people wouldn't even think of, that I want to make sure that we cover, because this is so important. I'm amazed that this is the first time I've ever done a show about it. I just, you know, it's one of those things I too don't want to deal with if I really tell the truth.
Yeah.
It's not a pretty picture. So we will be right back. I am speaking today with Justine Shuey, who is Juicy Justine. You can find her on the internet as Juicy Justine. And she is a sexual educator who really presents a lot of workshops on a variety of topics. Today we're talking about sexually transmitted diseases and how it can affect you. So please stay tuned. This could be a life-saving program for you. We'll be right back.
Have you ever wished for an end to pests in and around your home, around your office? Stop paying for dangerous chemicals that can harm your children, your pets, and your clients. Today in Arizona and Florida, an environmentally responsible pest control company named Ladybug has set up shop to provide natural and organic pest control services. Ladybug can help you stop even the most persistent, nastiest bugs with green, organic products that are friendly to people and pets. In addition, there are franchise opportunities in Arizona, Florida, and throughout the USA. To learn more about Ladybug's home-friendly and earth-smart green pest control services, visit the Ladybug website at ladybugcorp.com or call us at 561-276-7600. Ladybug guarantees you another eco-friendly, pest-free day, naturally.
How would you like to lose up to a pound a day with no exercise required, with no hunger, without being on a restrictive diet for the rest of your life, and no unpleasant side effects? If this appeals to you, you want homeopathic HCG. How do you get that? You go to hormonenurse.com. That's H-O-R-M-O-N-E, nurse.com. There you can find out about HCG and this amazing diet. It's a diet I've used, and I've lost an amazing amount of weight. I'm back to my college size. Plus, you'll find out about hormones, bioidentical hormones. Perhaps you need that too. You need it maybe for sleep, for sexual passion again, your libido. Go to hormonenurse.com. We're back with Sex and Happiness, and you're listening today to a show on sexually transmitted diseases with Dr. Justine Marie Shuey, who is teaching us about all kinds of things, how we can, with skin-to-skin contact or or openings to openings contact, how we can make ourselves vulnerable to sexually transmitted diseases and what to do if we find out we have one or if we notice some abnormality in our skin or one of the surfaces. Well, Justine, we left off with syphilis and gonorrhea, and what else? What else can we cook up in this this menu of infections?
All kinds of things. Chlamydia right now is one of the number one sexually transmitted infections in the United States. It's very, very common. It can be transmitted through vaginal sex, oral sex, anal sex, doesn't matter. Sexually transmitted infections don't discriminate. Anyone can get them. Generally, they would be asymptomatic, so you wouldn't necessarily know you have it. If you did have it and you had some symptoms, you might have, like, discharge from the penis or from the vaginal opening. You may have burning during urination. Some women may have, like, lower abdominal pain during intercourse. Some may have irregular bleeding between periods. Men have sometimes swelling or pain in the testicles. So if it's untreated, it can lead to serious reproductive health problems. So it's important to get tested regularly for sexually transmitted infections, even if you don't think you have anything, because for, you know, women, for example, if it's untreated, it could spread into the uterus and the fallopian tubes and cause something called pelvic inflammatory disease, which is something you do not want to get because it can cause permanent damage and can lead to things like infertility.
So chlamydia. And what is chlamydia? Is that a virus?
No, chlamydia is not. It is a bacteria.
Okay. And how is that treated?
Generally treated with antibiotics.
And is that getting more powerful than some of the antibiotics, like what you mentioned before?
Everything is getting drug resistant.
That's not a pretty picture.
No. And part of it has to do with the overuse of antibiotics, just, you know, people taking them too much, doctors recommending them too much, but also just because the viruses and the infections and the diseases are trying to survive, just like humans do. They grow and they change to survive. Infections and stuff like that do the same things.
You know, I remember when I was a kid, I've had tonsillitis many times. I still have my tonsils. My father didn't believe in having my tonsils taken out. So we didn't. And he always said to me, don't take too much penicillin or antibiotic. Don't ever take too much antibiotic. Don't let them just prescribe it for you. If you can avoid taking them, avoid taking them, because you never know when you're really going to need them. And there are things that resist antibiotics. So I think that my father in this case gave me some really, really good advice. I don't take antibiotics unless I absolutely have to. And I think that's generally a good rule of thumb for people, but people just don't know.
Yeah. I mean, antibiotics aren't going to treat viruses. So things like the common cold can't be treated by an antibiotic, and a lot of people don't realize that.
Very good. Very good to know. What else do we have here besides chlamydia? You mentioned, what about, there are some other things. Spirochetes, or there's other things. I can't remember the name of them.
I'm not sure what you're referring to. You just lost.
Yeah, I don't know. Somebody I know once had something that was very painful, and they had to take pills for, and it seemed like they were little spermatozoas or something. They weren't sperms, but they
are you talking about, like, scabies and crabs and things like that?
I wasn't talking about that, but let's move to that, unless there's something else we didn't really talk about HIV and AIDS as yet, but since we just mentioned these little bug things, let's talk about these little bug things.
So scabies are very easy to pass from one person to another. They are generally like little mites, and they will cause a rash on the skin. It's very contagious. They're very small. Symptoms, you'll be very itchy, especially at night. There will be sores from the scratching. So you've got to be aware of that. They are easily passed on things like towels, bedding, clothing of someone who has scabies. So sheets and things like that can have scabies in them. So if you know someone who's had scabies, stay away until they are fully treated and they've also, you know, thoroughly cleaned everything in their house. I remember when I was in college, in the dorms, there was a student who ended up with scabies. They took everybody out of his dorm room. They threw away all the mattresses in the dorm room. They moved him out and, like, quarantined him. And they started doing all these lectures on what to look for if you think you have it, what to do, how it was transmitted. And, you know, he was very cautious about letting everyone around him know, hey, I have scabies, don't come close to me because, you know, if you touch my clothing and things like that. But other things you'll notice, so there'll be like pencil mark lines on the skin, things like that.
Well, this is one that I actually have some experience with. I once went to stay at a friend's house on the Cape in Massachusetts, and when I came back from staying, and this was not somebody that I was any way, shape, or form sexually involved with. It was just a friend that I was going to visit. And when I came back to Boston, I came back and I had itches for days, and I started taking Benadryl. And because I thought I was having an allergic reaction to something. And after, I don't know, days on Benadryl and nothing was changing, I went to the doctor and I said, I'm itching like crazy. I'm taking Benadryl. It's not doing anything. And the test the doctor gave me was scratching my skin with a small scalpel and putting a piece of my skin under a microscope. And there, sure enough, was a little thing that was a scabie. And the treatment for this was amazing. It was 3 days of a chalk-like substance from neck to toes. Like I had to be covered in this thing. And I looked pink, sort of pinkish for 3 days. I couldn't go to work and I couldn't touch anybody or see anybody or anything. And what you just said, the description of throwing out everything, laundering everything, had to do all that. And that was just from an overnight visit to somebody that I was a friend of.
Absolutely. And a lot of people have heard of it now because I don't know how familiar you are with like MTV's Real World. There was a cast member on one of the shows once that got it, and they brought in a medical professional to test everyone else in the house, and they showing how they had to clean everything and things like that. So more people knew what it was because of MTV.
And so covering scabies, we need to move to crabs. And what are crabs?
Pubic lice. So it's lice just like you'd get on your head or on your scalp. And it, again, it is a like an insect, a bug, just the same effects you would have as if you had lice on your head.
And what do you do for this? How do you treat this?
Similarly to the way that they would treat lice on your head. So they have creams and things like that, but they would give you a special shampoo, and you need to thoroughly work it into like the pubic hair and the surrounding areas, rinse it well, comb through it and all of that, and do the directions exactly like it says. There are over-the-counter treatments for lice, so they have like Rid and Nix and things like that, and that'll thoroughly clean it. And also you'll need to make sure that you wash all linens and clothings in hot water.
There's a new trend of people not having pubic hair.
Actually, hair is coming back, but yes, that's a good point. If you don't have hair, you're less likely to have pubic lice, but also there's been...
Wait a minute. Hair is coming back.
Bush is back. That's what I'm hearing. It's becoming more and more popular because of shaving causes ingrown hairs, which hurt, and, you know, you get irritated. Brazilian waxing is not much fun. I don't know if you've ever gotten a Brazilian wax done, but it hurts like hell. Hair is coming back, but yes. If you don't have hair, you can't really get pubic lice, but some people say if you don't have hair, you're more likely to get other things like herpes and HPV. I don't know if there's actually scientific research on this, but people have said this because the hair creates sort of a barrier, and it creates a barrier for both fluids, and you can't have skin-to-skin contact if you've got a big old bush there blocking in between. So...
Well, very interesting. All right, we're gonna break here for a moment. When we come back, we're gonna talk about HIV and AIDS, and then some trends in sexually transmitted diseases. This is Laurie Handlers. You're listening to Sex and Happiness, and on my show today, talking about all these not pleasant side effects of having pleasure and sex in your life. We're talking about STDs with Dr. Justine Marie Shuey. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Many times you've heard my guests and me discuss emotional release techniques. Now you can do emotional release work in the privacy of your own home. In my CD, Shamanic Release in Lati Han, I create a very, very safe and sacred space in which you can do the powerful work I'm known for in my Tantra courses. First, I set you up with the proper positioning and breathing, and then I guide you through emotional states to the beat of tribal African rhythms. Try this CD as an easy way to do your personal clearing work on a regular basis and watch your relationships walk free from emotional baggage. You can order my CD at butterflyworkshops.com for only $20. I believe you're worth it. I hope you do. Go to butterflyworkshops.com and get your copy now and walk free from emotional baggage.
You're listening to Sex and Happiness. This program is really all about you and sex and happiness, how they relate to each other and how they relate to you. And in order to stay happy and be able to have safe sexuality, today we're dealing with one of the realities of pleasure, which is that we have to protect ourselves from side effects, things that could happen to us, infections that we could get from simply not doing our homework, which is to interview our partners and get regularly checked ourselves for things that look and feel like an infection and things that we may not know we have because they don't have symptoms or they're asymptomatic, as Justine has been pointing out to us. So far we've covered herpes and HPV, we've covered syphilis and gonorrhea, and we've covered the bugs, scabies and crabs.
And chlamydia, we talked about.
Oh, and chlamydia, right, and chlamydia. I wish I could think of that other thing I was talking about before. Maybe I'll think of it while we're talking. But is there anything else? Is there something that we've left out before we get to HIV and AIDS?
What about like trichomoniasis? Is that maybe what you were
thinking? Oh, trichomonas. I thought it was called. That's it.
Trichomonas, trichomoniasis. A lot of people call it a lot of different things. But that is a single cell protozoan parasite. The vagina is usually the most common site of infection in women. The urethra, or the opening where men urinate from, is the most common site of this infection for men. So it's a parasite. It's sexually transmitted through penis-to-vagina intercourse or vulva-to-vulva intercourse. Symptoms would be things like vaginal discharge, vaginal odor, painful urination, discomfort during intercourse. Some people may never know they have it. Some people will notice it immediately because of the itching and things like that that may be associated with it. And then to treat, so they give you a prescription drug.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about when I said something like a spirochete.
Okay.
I knew it was, you know, one of those protozoa things. And from what I understand, it's very, very painful to have that. It's something that people just almost want to die when they have it until it's over. It's just very, very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So now we're moving into HIV and AIDS. What's really the difference when people say HIV positive or when people say AIDS? Really, what's the distinction?
So a lot of people do use the terms interchangeably, but they're really not. So HIV is the human immunodeficiency virus. That is a virus that kills your body's CD4 cells. And so that is essentially the CD4 cells help your body fight off infection and disease. AIDS is something you get after you have HIV, and so it is the acquired immunodeficiency syndrome. It is not a virus. AIDS is caused by HIV, and really it happens. It's a disease that you get when HIV destroys your body's immune system, and they generally recognize AIDS, that you have acquired AIDS, once your body has reached, your CD4 cell count has dropped below a certain number, and you've gotten one of a few different opportunistic infections. And that's what they say when you have AIDS, is once your CD4 cell count has dropped and you've gotten one of those opportunistic infections, that's when you have AIDS.
So what can people do? I mean, AIDS is very preventable, and yet...
Well, no. HIV is very preventable. Once you have HIV, many people live long, healthy, fulfilling lives. Some people never develop AIDS. So, yeah, those are two very different things.
And how can people live very normal, healthy lives?
Yes, HIV is killing your body's ability to fight diseases and infections, but if you are eating healthy and doing things that everyone should really be doing and just living a healthy lifestyle, you can live for a very long time with HIV. It's not a death sentence like people make it out to.
Well, we know there are famous celebrities who have HIV. I think Magic Johnson might be the basketball player might be the most famous person, and he seems to be living a happy and productive lifestyle.
Absolutely.
So for people, the big distinction here is that once someone would be diagnosed with HIV, if they live a super healthy lifestyle after that, they can live long and productive lives. But if they let it go, I just don't understand how it progresses from HIV to AIDS without somebody noticing. How could this happen?
You will notice a person once they progress from HIV to AIDS, because they will have one of a few different opportunistic infections, and you'll know when they've gotten to that point. Yeah, their CD4 cell count could drop and come back up. It's not going to stay steady throughout and slowly all go way down. It could go up and down based on, like, medications, and if you're taking your medications regularly, if the strand of HIV you have, because there are different strands of it, if it's reacting to the drug cocktails that they have you on, if you're remembering to take your drugs every day, things like that. Once you have AIDS, you will have severely progressed and you have an opportunistic infection. And so the different opportunistic infections that you would get have other signs and symptoms that you would obviously notice.
Opportunistic infection, that's the first time I've ever heard that term. That's something that means something that comes into your body because your body's not able to fight things off anymore.
Yes. So there's things like tuberculosis is considered a opportunistic infection. And if you had HIV and your CD4 cell count was too low and you got tuberculosis, it could kill you. You could get blood poisoning, or you can get sepsis. You can get things like herpes, really, you know, different types of herpes, or shingles, viral infections. You could get things like fungal infections. You can get Kaposi's sarcoma, lymphoma, carcinomas. Those are going to be the opportunistic infections that you're going to worry about.
You're talking about dire circumstances here.
Yeah.
You're talking about, like, horrible, letting something go horribly. And so somebody would need to be tested to know that they have HIV.
Yeah, you need to be tested to know. There's no way that you would know if you hadn't been tested. You should be tested regularly. You can get tested for free in a lot of places. If you go online and you just, like, Google free HIV test, you can find plenty of places to have it. You can buy HIV tests in, like, Walgreens now and administer them yourself, and then you send the samples in. I don't recommend those because you'd call in and get your results in, like, 2 weeks or whatever. But the people who are giving you those results generally are not trained HIV counselors, whereas if you go to a local clinic or a local hospital or just a local testing site, you know, one of the testing vans, you would have a great HIV counselor that can give you plenty of information, they could give you resources, they could talk to you about what you're doing, you know, what practices you're engaging in, and how you can better protect yourself.
Now, we're kind of running out of time, but I want to stress two things. People do know to use condoms. They do know that there are dental dams available. There are things that can protect you. But there are some kinds of lubricants that should not be used with certain kinds of condoms. Can you just say something quickly about that so people can know that they could be using protection and then unprotected because they've used the wrong lubricant.
Okay, so latex and polyurethane condoms are the only kinds of condoms that really are preventing against sexually transmitted infections. Lambskin condoms only protect against pregnancy. As far as lubricants, you can never, ever use an oil-based lubricant with the latex condom because the oil on the lubricant will break down the latex in the condom, and therefore you will have an ineffective condom. But other types of lubricants are generally okay to use. And you should be using lubricant with condoms because it'll reduce friction and therefore reduce the likeliness that the condoms will tear or break.
So we're talking about water-based lubricants then.
Water-based lubricants are fantastic. Silicone lubricants are great. You can use those too. There's like temperature-based lubricants, like what you might find on like a warming lubricant or something like that. You can use those, but you don't want to use any oil-based anything. So no Crisco, no olive oil, nothing like that with latex condoms. It will break down your condoms.
Last question for you, because I know this is, and we do have to cover this kind of fast, but I know there's some prevalence of a rise in sexually transmitted diseases with older adults. Why is this? It sounds crazy.
Okay, so older adults. Years and years ago, before HIV and AIDS came around, there wasn't this "you have to use a condom" message everyone was hearing. And a lot of people back then were in a relationship with one partner. And so they've been in this relationship with their partner for years and years and years, since way before HIV and AIDS came around. And, you know, now their partner has passed away and they're out experimenting. Well, they're older, so they don't really have to worry about pregnancy. That doesn't mean they don't need to worry about sexually transmitted infections. So older adults aren't using condoms. They're engaging in sexual contact with other older adults, or younger adults for that matter, whoever's their fancy, and not using condoms or other sorts of barrier methods of protection, and therefore putting themselves at risk for sexually transmitted infections, including HIV. So there is a rise in HIV and sexually transmitted infections among older adults.
And I hear that this is happening in these senior assisted living centers.
Yep, and everywhere else, because not everybody lives in a center like that, but it doesn't mean they can't find sex partners. You know, old people have sex too. Everybody has sex.
I have an upcoming show with somebody that has written a book about seniors and sex, and I'm very excited. That's going to be a show coming up in the next couple of episodes. So what you're saying is absolutely true. Plus, the population is getting older. All the baby boomers are, mm-hmm. you know, the baby boomers are over 60. So people who are used to having a lot of sex are actually still having a lot of sex.
Yeah, and I just wanted to make one final comment. So, like, we're talking about how not to get an infection, but what happens if you have one and you're still out there having sex? You can still be sexual. What do you do if your partner says, if you say, "Hey, have you ever had a sexually transmitted infection, or do you currently have a sexually transmitted infection?" And your partner says yes, it doesn't mean you can't have sex. It means you need to educate yourself and know how to prevent the transmission of those things. Also, if you're looking for partners, there's websites for people who have certain sexually transmitted infections. Like, you can get a herpes dating site. There's people with HIV. The only thing you need to be aware of, there are different strands of these viruses. So just because someone may be HIV positive, it doesn't mean that they can have unprotected sex with someone else who is HIV positive, because they could have two different strands and they can reinfect themselves and then have multiple strands of the HIV virus in their body.
I'm so glad you said that. That busts up another myth. So thank you so much for saying not to have unprotected sex just because you have something, because the strands can be different. Wow. Thank you. Justine, how can people get in touch with you?
My website, juicyjustine.com. You can hit me up through there. I also have a Facebook and a Twitter and a FormSpring and all of that, but you can find all of that on juicyjustine.com, or you can email me, justine@juicyjustine.com, JuicyJustine.com.
Thank you so much for being my guest today and talking with me about this very sobering subject.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yes, I appreciate you so much for returning to the show. And I'm going to sign off letting people know that in the next show, I'm going to be talking about attraction and sexiness, what makes people feel sexy or feel attracted to other people, sexual attraction. And I also want to let people know that you can now get some teleseminars from me. You can get MP3s of seminars that I've been doing on expanded female orgasm, female ejaculation, expanded men's orgasm. You can go to butterflyworkshops.com and find out more about these teleseminars that you're welcome to participate in. So please do that, and please remember to write to me at sexandhappiness@gmail.com. This is Laurie Handler signing off for Sex and Happiness. Until next time.
Thank you for joining us today for Sex and Happiness. To learn more about Laurie and her work, please go to butterflyworkshops.com or follow her on Twitter or Facebook. You can send her an email at sexandhappiness@gmail.com. And if you'd like to listen to podcasts of Laurie's previous show, Tantra Cafe, please go to tantracafe.com. We'll see you again right here next week for another edition of Sex and Happiness. Want you to know.